Hey everyone, why don't you say hello to Tom Akazuki? Tom, as you may have noticed, is one of our drummers here at Inglewood Church. He's been coming here for about 6 or 7 months and part of the worship team, a very enthusiastic and good drummer. And yes, he is. And Tom, just tell us a little bit about, come here, brother, don't be scared. Tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe how you became a Christian.
Hi guys, I'm Tom. Like Mark said, I've been going to church probably for maybe the better part of 5 or 6 years, but I've been going to this church for about 7 months. And basically, how I became—I've been going to church for a long time, but to be quite honest, I never was a Christian. For the better part of my youth, I've been living in addiction, substance abuse, alcoholism, and juvenile delinquency tendencies, and I always suffered from low self-esteem and depression and fear and anxiety. And basically, what happened was about 18 months ago, I was ready to commit suicide, and a Christian man scooped me up just in time, and he became my mentor, basically. And I met this man. I stayed up all night with him. I talked to him all about my life, and we prayed. And from the next day onwards, or shortly after that, the urge to drink and drug went away. So at the moment, I'm 16 months clean and sober. He's continually been my mentor. Basically, what I want to talk quickly about, bear with me, people. I'm not the best public speaker, but I'd like to share something with you guys. It's a passage out of the Bible that really means a lot to me. It's from the King James Bible, and it goes, "Thou blind Pharisee, cleanse first that which is within the cup and the platter, so that the outside of them may be clean also." It's Matthew 23:26. Basically, what I always thought that my external world was the problem. You know, my job, my family, my bad upbringing. You know, always feeling sorry for myself. You know, nothing was ever good enough. But internally, what my mentor explained to me is I had to get right what was within me first. What's going on in turn? Tom, you're being a victim. You know, you're judging everyone. You know, nothing's ever good enough for you. No one ever spoke like this to me before. All the counselors and psychologists wanted to validate my bad behavior. But it wasn't until these group of men mentored me and showed me the truth and held me accountable and basically got me connected to Christ is basically my story. And from that time, I've gone from unemployment to employment. I've now reconnected relationships with my family. I've been able to serve on this church, which I'm very grateful for. Basically, if my story can tell anything, is that any problem can be overcome from the power of Christ. I'm just really grateful. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Awesome. I wonder if there's anyone in your life that's really tough to lead. Think about the person maybe at your workplace or maybe in school or maybe an education facility or even someone at home that's really tough to lead. You know, the sort of person that doesn't wash their coffee cup. The sort of person that doesn't clean up after themselves in the workplace and you go in the kitchen, they've stolen your lunch. Maybe something deeper than that. Maybe someone relationally that, you know, is just cantankerous and negative all the time. I wonder who you would say is the toughest person in your life that there is to lead. I want to make the hypothesis, I want to make the theory this morning that in fact, the toughest person in your life that you have to lead is actually yourself. You're actually the toughest person in your life to lead. You cannot control anyone else, or if you can, you can only be for a certain period of time. But in terms of your own capacity and in terms of what you are going to do, and as I look around this room, I think about what you're going to do for the rest of your life, however long that might be, the choices you make will produce a certain type of person, whether you make no choices or make lots of choices. What you choose to do with the time that God has given you, they're some of the most toughest decisions you can make. As we're looking at this series of building up, we're going to be exploring the life of Nehemiah. Particularly this morning, we're looking at chapter 2. And His life seemingly was all stretched out before him until he was confronted with something. And at that point, he had a decision to make about what sort of person he was going to be, what he was going to do with the rest of his life. I remember when I turned 40, which was 7 years ago, you know, a lot of people talk about 40 as though it's some sort of thing, and I thought, I'm not going to be depressed when I turn 40. Life's just going to go on. It wasn't the truth. For me, when I turned 40, actually it was truly a thing where I sat down some of you will know, I got quite depressed, actually. I was quite struck by what I hadn't achieved in my life up to that point and what I was going to achieve and what I thought I would have achieved by that age. And it's humorous in a sense, but actually it was quite serious for me at that point. But I made some decisions. And I said to myself, you know what? Every single 12 months, in 12 months, for the rest of my life, I'm going to learn something new. I'm going to challenge myself in some way. Now, I remember, and you probably laugh about this, and maybe it's humorous, I don't know. But at the age of 40, this is what I did. I said, you know what? I'm going to buy a Mac computer. And I'm going to move from Windows to Mac, and I think it's going to suit me better, and it's going to struggle. There's no start button down the bottom left corner. What's with that? And the stupid mouse is weird. But I thought to myself, you know what? Forget it. I'm just going to challenge myself and learn something new this next year. And I did. And some of you will know that every opportunity I get, I will go and I'll do some personal development, some spiritual development, some professional development. There are people that are close to me and they talk to me about their workplaces. And they were saying, you know what? Every opportunity in my workplace that I get, I'm going to get some PD. I'm going to get some professional development. And I watch people who go throughout their whole life and they actually are changing and growing and pushing themselves and learning new skills their whole life. They're building themselves up. They're allowing God to actually increase their capacity. I love that. I love when people tell me I'm learning a new skill. Yesterday I was having breakfast with someone, Melinda and I, and we were having some breakfast with our friends, and they were telling me about this course they're going to be going on. And I thought, and they said, you know what, I've always wanted to do this. It's not my career, but I want to do it, and I've always wanted to do it. And I thought, good on you. Go and do it. Because here's the thing about increasing your capacity. I think there are two ways to increase your capacity. Firstly, there is to put yourself into situations where your capacity, where you are actually stretched. Someone told me at the start of this year, they prayed, Lord, and they did. They told me this the other week. They said, Lord, I want you to increase my capacity. And what's happened to them this year is they've been placed in challenging after challenging situation. And they're like, why did I pray that prayer, man? Why did I do this? This has been difficult. But if your capacity, your ability, your strengths and your gifts and you as a person are going to increase, it's going to take difficult circumstance. You know, it's the old cliche, isn't it? Lord, I pray for patience and give it to me now. You know, it's the same with capacity. Be very careful what you pray for. But I think that's one way where you're placed into challenging circumstances. You as a person, you as an individual, you'll be stretched if you're placed in challenging circumstances where you've actually got to rise up. Another way is to immerse yourself and to place yourself in situations where you're learning off others and seeing what they do. And I love doing that. I'm sure many of you do too. To listen. I think you can learn something off anyone. But here's the rub. For many of you here this morning, this might be challenging. For many of you here this morning, you actually can look ahead 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and you're thinking, well, as long as I keep doing what I'm doing now, I'm going to be happy. I want to challenge that this morning. Nehemiah found himself in that position, actually. In Nehemiah chapter 2, the story goes like this. Early this following spring, the month of Nisan, during the 20th year of King Xerxes' reign, I was serving the king his wine. I had never before been sad in his presence. So the king asked me, why are you looking so sad? You don't look sick to me. You must be deeply troubled. Then I was terrified, but I replied, long live the king. How can I not be sad? For the city where my ancestors are buried is in ruins and the gates have been destroyed by fire. Self-awareness and understanding where you are and what you're doing and where you're headed is actually the first step in order for you to be built up, in order for your capacity to be increased, in order for you to grow as a person. Here was Nehemiah. He had his whole future actually stretched out before him. Many of you will know that he was the cupbearer to the king. And this isn't a waiter, okay? This is not a waiter. This is actually someone that has very much weight in their hand. A lot of authority, a lot of power was invested in Nehemiah. He had risen up through the ranks. His nation had been taken off into exile. He was serving a foreign king in a foreign land. Yes, we know all that. But actually, he'd risen up through the ranks to a position of prestige and power. The cupbearer was someone that was actually really important in the kingdom. So he finds himself in a position where he is serving one of the greatest kings, most powerful men of that day. He had a position of power and authority. He was getting a good wage. He was a cupbearer to the king. When he walked down the street, people said, "There is Nehemiah. He's a cupbearer to the king. He's important." His life actually was stretched out before him. This is where I'm going. This is what I'm doing. I've made it. I'm comfortable. Everything is great. Then news comes. Your city is in ruins. Your people are in captivity. The city of Jerusalem needs to be what? It needs to be rebuilt. And so he's struck. At this point in his life, he's got a choice to make. How will he respond to this news? For many of us, to be honest, if you're honest, sometimes that whisper comes, you know, that challenge comes, the voice comes. There's something that's not right. And I know this, and I wonder if you know this too. You've heard that whisper. You've heard that challenge. And you say to yourself, "Yeah, but my future's stretched out before me. I'm comfortable here. I know what I'm doing. I know my place in the world. I don't want to be stretched. Someone else can do it." Nehemiah doesn't do that. Nehemiah hears that news and it affronts him. And he realizes at this point in his life, he's actually got to do something about it. In order for him to do something about it, his capacity has to be increased. He has to grow as a person. He's got to face up to things. And I wonder for us, I wonder for you, if in fact we are the same. I wonder if in fact your effectiveness as a person, your effectiveness as a Christian is actually limited by your capacity. This is exactly what happens to Nehemiah. Up to this point in history, in fact, there is one person whose name everyone knew, King Xerxes. It was his story at this point. He was a king. He had conquered the land. He had done all the stuff. He was important in the land. He was an important man. But you know what? I don't know anyone who's called Xerxes. I don't know anyone who calls their kid Xerxes. Who is he? But I reckon most of us know who Nehemiah is. Right here, he faces a challenge. Will he start to write his own book? Or will he continue to be just the pages of King Xerxes' book? Will it be his story that people tell? Or will it always be someone else's? It's a challenge for you. Whose story are you writing? You're writing someone else's story, you're going to write your own. He has to take a risk. This is a key thought this morning that I want you to go away with. He has to take a risk. And Nehemiah has to ask himself this very deep question. Is the reward worth the risk? For you yourself, living and doing the things that you do, is the reward worth the risk? Is what God's calling to you to, is it worth the risk? Is it worth taking a risk? Was the reward of seeing the walls built up, was it worth the risk that Nehemiah had to take? I'm sure many of you know that what I'm talking about here. He's got a question he needs to go. He needs to go in front of the king. Now, the king's presence, as many of you would know, to go into the king's presence with what? With a sad face, actually meant that his life was at peril. But he needed to go to the king with a sad face. He needed to go because he needed to ask the king a question. Will you let me go? Will you let me go back and rebuild the wall? He had to ask himself, is the reward worth the risk? Because going before the king with a sad face was potentially terminal for him. Will he do it? What will he do? I wonder if, in fact, we've been paralyzed at any point by risk. I wonder if, in fact, if you've ever been paralyzed by the fear of failure. Nehemiah has to go, and he has to go to the king. He has to ask him permission. Can I do it? The king replies, verse 4, how can I help you? How can I help you? There are people in your life, and let's be practical for a moment. There are people in your life which, if you are going to stretch out, if you're going to allow your capacity to be increased, if you're going to go off and you're going to do something else, if you're going to challenge yourself, if you're going to allow God to challenge you and to increase your capacity, there are actually people you need to go to, permission givers, that you need to go to and seek their permission. All of us, in fact, are people under authority. We all have someone that we have to go to. In Nehemiah's case, it was the king. And it's an interesting thing. I can just imagine his whole stomach churning as he's thinking about going before the king. Maybe it took him 2 or 3 days to do. We're not told. What will he say? How will he react? Will he give me permission to go? Is the risk worth the reward? I find the king's response incredible. As Nehemiah lays out his heart to him, as he's honest to him, as he just tells him what's actually going on, he utters some beautiful words. How can I help you? I don't know what type of leaders you've got in your life. I don't know whether they're secure leaders or insecure leaders. But it seems to me that King Xerxes was totally secure. Because Nehemiah comes to him with something that could potentially be threatening. And in fact, he says to him, how can I help you? I wonder if you've ever asked yourself, as you seek to do something new for God, as you seek to stretch yourself or allow yourself to be stretched, I wonder if you've asked yourself the question, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? I have. When we put on the Whisper Conference a couple of months ago, we were sitting around talking with each other and we were saying to us, well, what's the worst going to happen? The worst thing that could have happened actually was that no one turned up. That was the worst thing that could have happened. And you know what? We were willing to live with that risk. No one turned up. Nothing ventured, nothing gained. But we asked ourselves a question, you know what? The reward is worth the risk. And as it turned out, it totally was. It could not have gone, it went better than what we could have ever expected or hoped or dreamed. What's going on for you? In what areas is God challenging you? Or are you allowing yourself to grow as a leader, as a person? Do you feel sometimes that you're just on this conveyor belt, on this track, on this journey, and everything's just laid out before you? Or do you feel like your future is full of possibilities, full of challenge, and full of change? How do you actually feel about that for yourself? Are you open to the possibility that God actually wants to increase your capacity? He actually wants more for you. I don't think Nehemiah was sitting there in his office saying, well, God, what's next? I actually feel like it was just something that was actually dropped in his lap. Sometimes that happens like that, where God just drops something in our lap. Sometimes it's a combination of us saying, Lord, I want to do this, and God saying, well, how can I help you do that? Sometimes it's God coming to us and saying, you know what, here is an opportunity. I want you to take me up on it. I don't know if there's any one pattern in the way it works. But what I do absolutely with all my heart, believe for you. I honestly believe that for every single one of you here this morning, so God has something for you for tomorrow. What's happened yesterday is gone. It's done. You might find this amusing. As I was approaching my 40th year, I was thinking, man, it's all over. It's all done. I'm turning 40. It's like it's done. You know the 20, 30-year-olds, that's how they think. You know, it's like 40. It's so old, man. I've told this story before. I reckon it's worth retelling. The Lord used an incredibly silly thing to challenge me. In that moment, some of you are going to know where I'm going with this. But in that moment, Betty White won an Oscar at age 71. And I'm looking at thinking, here is, she's lived her whole life, the Golden Girls, all the rest, you know. And then suddenly she's in this movie at age 70 and she wins the pinnacle of her career as at age 70. Don't let whatever your circumstance is, whoever you are, whatever you have now, limit actually what God can and wants to do through you. Not your age, not your wealth, not your position, nothing. I actually feel like exactly what Tom was saying. It's actually what's inside that matters, and your attitude and your willingness to say, you know what, Lord, yes, yes, Lord, yes. We're told and we're given so much instruction on how to say no. I'm sick of saying no. I actually want to say yes. Yes, God. Yes. Someone came to me with an incredibly risky proposal for us as a church next year. I can't tell you what it is. You'll find out. Rob, our chairman, is laughing. He doesn't even know yet. I said to the person, I said, you know what? I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say yes. You know what? Little duck paddling, kicking its feet below the pond. No one can see. It's working hard. You know, sometimes we just got to do that. I want to challenge you this morning. Say yes. Don't say no. Maybe you've been saying no too much. If you keep saying no, your capacity is going to decrease. Maybe the whisper's going to stop. You want to be built up, you've got to be stretched. Find out how to do it later. Start kicking. Say yes. It's exactly what Nehemiah does. And an incredible, amazing turn of events. The king says those beautiful words. How can I help you? Here's some practical stuff. You know, if you've got permission givers in your life, maybe you need to go to them and spell out what it is that you want to do. Sometimes that's challenging. Sometimes they'll say no. Sometimes they'll be insecure and they don't want you to get ahead of yourself. Man, I don't want to do that. I want people that serve with me and maybe you're under some of my authority. I want to lift them up. I want to see them do what I do. Maybe if an opportunity comes for you to take a position of authority, to maybe do something that maybe is above your station, do it. Do it. Have a go. The worst thing that happens is no one turns up. You know? Say yes. Nehemiah said yes. He goes before the king and the king says, how can I help you? I can just imagine the relief in his heart. Or maybe the trepidation as he then thought about the fact, well, oh my, I've actually got to do this thing now. I've got to leave my king's story and I've got to start to write my own story. It's a beautiful story. In verse 8, just perhaps a question, just perhaps just a tempering to this or maybe even a sense of warning about this. In fact, it's verse 10. When Sambalat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite, it's always the Ammonites, isn't it? What is it with the Ammonites? Anyway, the Ammonite official heard of my arrival. These are the words it says in the scriptures. They were very displeased that someone had come to help the people of Israel. They were very displeased that someone had come to help the people of Israel. There is a reality in our Australian culture, you know, the tall poppy syndrome. Someone getting ahead of themselves, getting ahead of their station. They think more of themselves than what they ought. We have that. If you allow God to increase your capacity, if you allow God to build you up on the inside, if you start to take some risks, you need to understand there's going to be people that say, why can't you just keep doing what you've been doing? Why can't you just be the cupbearer for the rest of your life? There are going to be people that won't understand. If you hear the whisper of God in your heart and in your voice, you hear God's voice and you start to do something for God, you start to increase your capacity, you allow God to start to do some stuff through you, the Ammonites are going to come and say, man, I'm really displeased that you're doing this. Why can't you just stay where you are and keep doing what you're doing? Why do they do that? Because they didn't want the Israelites to be helped. They liked their power. They liked their position of authority. They liked the fact that the Israelites' walls were broken down and they had gone as a nation. They liked to see others in poverty, less than what they could be. They did not want to see a leader come with letters from the king saying, I'm going to change stuff, I'm going to build stuff up, we're going to build these walls. They didn't like it. Nehemiah would not let that stop him. And neither should you. Whatever it is God's calling you to, maybe your frustration is God isn't calling you to anything. Well, stop. Listen. The last 2 months have been about hearing the voice of God. Stop, listen. Start to say yes. Just as the band's coming up this morning, just to finish us off with the last couple, just the last song this morning. I really feel, I wrote this down on my piece of paper. I didn't write down much, but I wrote down this. Can we all stand? Let's just have an attitude of prayer and just openness to God this morning. I actually really expect this morning there are going to be some here today that this message has really impacted and really helped. So let's just stand, let's bow our heads, let's close our eyes, let's have an attitude of prayer this morning. I believe this is a word for someone here this morning, that God is a God of creativity. And this morning there are some who actually believe that that's not their story. Who truly believe they're just meant to keep going. I want God to speak. I want you to allow God to speak to you now and to give you hope for your future. God can solve problems that you haven't even thought of yet. If you're feeling stuck this morning, if you're feeling like you don't know where you're meant to be going, and but there's still a glimmer of hope, why don't you just extend your hands, your palms open to God. Just do that now. Just as a physical sign. No one's looking. Lord, I feel stuck. I don't want to be stuck. I want to start saying yes. If that's you, just extend your hands out now. Just to receive from God. Lord, for the hearts that have been broken, for the pain and disappointment, for the feeling like we've been pushed and bashed and shunted around and forgotten and neglected. Lord, I pray you'll take that away in this moment and you'll replace it with hope. Replace it with courage. Lord, replace it with a sense that in fact you want us to say yes to you, our Lord Jesus. Yes to what is next. For the pain and disappointment that others have inflicted upon us. For those that want us to be part of their story and not have our own. For those that when we step out in faith, sneer and despise. We turn our eyes not onto that, but we turn our eyes onto that glorious hope, and we turn our eyes onto Jesus, who says to us, actually, I have a hope for you. I have a future for you. I have a plan for you that you don't even know yet. And I believe the word of the Lord for many here this morning is that we would say yes, that we would allow the Lord to build up us, to build our capacity, to stretch us, to cause us to be the people and to do the things and to take on the challenges that God is laying before us. We thank you for your love for us, Lord, and that you look at us and you see a beautiful people. A people with so much potential. We believe in you, Jesus. We're going to sing, we're going to celebrate you right now in Jesus' name. Amen.